It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, some Wisconsin lawmakers have brought up the idea of tolls to help pay for the state's roads and bridges. Look back at the recent history of the toll road debate in Wisconsin and how it compares to other transportation funding options. First, we look ahead to next Sunday's Academy Awards. This year, the movie Everything, Everywhere, All at Once may have the most buzz. It leads the pack with 11 nominations. Not far behind on the list is The Banshees of Inisherin and a remake of All Quiet on the Western Front. Also in the mix are blockbusters like Top Gun, Maverick, and Avatar, The Way of Water. One of our favorite film critics joins us now to preview the Oscars, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you seen any of this year's nominated movies or actors? What did you think? Are there films you saw you think should have been nominated for an Oscar? Are you looking for a recommendation, something you got to see before the ceremony? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Reggie Ponder is a film critic, also known as Reggie the Real Critic. He appears weekly on Vocalo in Chicago and critiques movies for several other media outlets. He's one of the voters for the Critics' Choice Awards. You can follow him at Twitter at Reggie the Real Critic. That's R-E-E-L. Reggie, welcome back to the show.
Bob, how are you?
Pretty good. Now, before we get to specific movies, just the mix of the 10 movies on this list of nominees, like some straight-up blockbusters, some quirky, weird things, some serious stuff. I mean, there's like, I don't know. I don't remember seeing this much variety in one class. What do you think?
I think you're right. I don't know if you recall last time we talked, there was the talk at the Oscars of having a special category for popular films. I wonder if that had, since they decided to scratch that, did that have any impact on the fact that there are some blockbusters here? I know Avatar, the original, did really well and was an Academy Award nominee and all of that. So the sequels don't usually make it to that. So the fact that Avatar is there, the fact that,
Avatar and the Top Gun. Do they even count as sequels, Reggie, when you wait this long? I mean, it's been like, you know, one or two generations. Does it mean I can finally count on that Buckaroo Banzai sequel coming out? These took a long time to come back to the theaters.
It did take a very, very, very long time. But I think as we talk about Avatar, the ones that are going to come after it probably won't take as long. I think just from a technological standpoint, that's the issue for Avatar, The Way of Water. If you talk about Top Gun, I just think that they were trying to get at it and didn't know how they could come back to it, and that they finally found something that they were satisfied with.
All right, let's start with what seems to be a favorite, Everything Everywhere All at Once. Now, I mentioned you vote on the Critics' Choice Award, best picture there, Everything Everywhere All at Once. Lots of nominations. I watched it. I enjoyed it. It was a wild movie. I wouldn't necessarily in years past think, yeah, the Oscar people are going to eat this up. Why is it there?
I think it's there because for a number of reasons. This whole issue about the multiverse is everywhere now. If you look at in all of the, you know, Marvel universe, everybody's talking about these different universes. And I think the way in which the writers and directors approach this, meaning Daniel Kwan and Daniel Scheinert and Jonathan Wang, the way they approach this was new, fresh, different, and funny. And good. And it had Michelle Yeoh. If you don't like Michelle Yeoh, I love her. What a great performance I felt. And I understand where you're coming from when you say, I don't know if this is really that Oscar-worthy movie. I do think that it breaks through the mundane films like a, and I don't mean mundane in terms of I didn't like it, but when you look at a movie like All Quiet on the Western Front, this is a totally different movie than something like that.
Exactly. And I want to go listen to Michelle Yeoh as Evelyn confronting her daughter about their relationship. Here is a listen.
You are getting fat and you never call me, even though we have a family plan.
What?
And it's free. You only visit when you need something. You got a tattoo, and I don't care. If it's supposed to represent our family, you know I hate tattoos. And of all the places I could be, why would I want to be here with you? Yes, you're right. The doesn't make sense.
Evelyn, Bishola, Gola.
Let her finish.
And I think that is pointing toward what you were talking about there, Reggie. It is this big high concept movie and science fiction and zaniness, but the relationships really are at the heart of it.
The relationships are absolutely at the heart of it. And it's this woman, ordinary woman, trying to figure out life and motherhood and being a wife, and they're trying to save the house, and just the relationship with the character that Jamie Lee Curtis plays. It's very, very quirky, but you have to stay with it. I will tell you, I know some folks who started it and said, I don't know. And I say, please stay with it. Stay with this movie. I think the payoff is worth it.
Talking to Reggie Ponder, a.k.a. Reggie the Real Critic, previewing the Oscars on Sunday. You can join in with your personal nominations, who you hope will win, your favorite movies of last year, ones you think should have been included, or your questions for Reggie. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to a caller now. Kay is with us in Madison. Kay, hello.
Hi. What? I recommend The Whale with Brendan Fraser. I thought his acting was incredible. He's up for Best Actor. And the fact that he had to have all those prosthetics on to act, I think must have made it harder to act. But I really loved that film.
Okay, thanks a lot for the call and the recommendation. Now, your Critics' Choice Award, Reggie, Brendan Fraser wins that for Best Actor, nominated in the Oscars. Can you talk about his role there and why it's obviously captured a lot of attention?
Yeah, it's captured a lot of attention, I think, first for the subject matter, and then second because people really felt that the care by which he took of that character and the subject matter was phenomenal. That people really could identify, as you know, sometimes when you put on all that prosthetics and things, you're like, is this a caricature or is this a real character? And he made it a character, not something that you're really making fun of. And after a while, you're not even thinking about that he has become this bigger guy just to try to play it. I think that he played it fantastically. I must say though that if Hong Chow was not in this film, I don't know if his performance would have been as great. I think that Hong, the interaction and the chemistry between the two of them is absolutely magical.
Thanks a lot for that call, Kay, at 800-642-1234. Want to check out another movie that's got various nominations, including Best Pictures. You know me, Reggie. I'm more of an aspirational movie fan. I haven't seen most of these. This is at the top of my list of, yeah, I should totally see this. The Banshees of Inisherin. I want to give a listen to Brendan Gleeson and Colin Farrell. They're having an In Bruges reunion in this movie. Talking about why one of them doesn't want to be friends anymore.
Just have this tremendous sense of time slipping away in me, Patrick. And I think I need to spend the time I've left thinking and composing and just trying not to listen to any more of the dull things that you have to say for yourself. But I'm sorry about it. I am like.
Are you dying?
No, I'm not dying.
But then you've loads of time.
Tell us about the Banshees of Inisherin, Reggie.
The first thing on this one is that, Rob, this was the acting in this was really, really good. Here are two guys who are friends for a long time. And then all of a sudden, as you can hear in this clip, is that one of them is like, I don't want to be around you anymore. I've realized that you're boring. He actually tells the guy's sister in the film, he says, your brother's boring. And she says, well, what changed? He said, I changed because I just don't have room for boring anymore. And so the acting in it is good. It's quirky. It is funny. But I will tell you, it wasn't my favorite film. After I left this film, I was like, I could see how the actors are getting the accolades they're getting. But my question is, for me, was this film memorable or did I care? And I didn't care about the characters. I don't want to tell what happened. There's something real important that happens in this film. And I don't want to tell for people who haven't seen it. But when I left the movie, it's like, oh, okay. It wasn't memorable enough for me, and it really wasn't. But I think the acting merits the accolades that they're getting right now.
We're talking to film critic Reggie Ponder right now, looking at some of the best movies of the year ahead of the Academy Awards coming up on Sunday, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Is there a movie or an actor that you're rooting for at this year's Oscars? What was your favorite movie that you saw last year, whether it's up for nominations or not? Do you need a recommendation for a little homework, something to watch before the awards next weekend? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Reggie Ponder, also known as Reggie the Real Critic, about this year's Oscar-nominated movies. And you can join in. Share your favorite movie from last year, what you'd like to see win awards on Sunday, a favorite performance maybe from one of the movies of the last year. Join in with your thoughts or your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Reggie, of the nominees, whether it's Best Picture or other, what's one for you that's kind of a sleeper that you just wish people were out there seeing that you think maybe deserves more of a splash than it's getting?
Women Talking. That was my film. I'm a little biased because I love Frances McDormand in almost everything. But the conversation that they had, excuse the pun, there was, it was so engrossing for me. And I really like this movie. I think that they did it so well, and I hope more people would see Women Talking.
Talk a little more about this. It's got a great cast, kind of a difficult story based on a true story, I understand, Reggie.
Yeah, it's based on a true story of the women who are living in this community. Some people would call it a cult, but they're living in this community where they're being raped, and the elders or the priests are basically sanctioning it. There that these men can come and have sex with these women at will. And the women are at a point where they're like, we're tired of it. So what are we going to do? And so the Women Talking part is the women coming together, figuring out what are they going to do? Are they going to fight, stay and fight? Are they going to run away? Are they going to try to take their families, like their kids with them? And so they're having this conversation, and all of the things that they bring up are things that make you go, wow, yeah, I didn't think about that. Oh yeah, well, you do have to consider this. It's a very fascinating conversation, and it's women talking.
Let's step away from Best Picture now, Reggie. I know you like to look at, you know, the documentaries, the short films, the animated features, things like that. What kind of things are you pulling for this year? Are you recommending to people?
I think that the film that's going to win for Best Animated Film is going to be Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. And I think it's going to win just because of the breakthrough nature of what they've done from an animated perspective. I was able to go to the premiere for that in New York and see at MoMA. They had this event at MoMA and see what they did. And they raised the level of stop motion animation to, wow, to greater heights. And I just think just because of the technology and what they did there, the story is fine. I think it's heartwarming and all of that, but just watching this on the big screen. So I would say to people, if you're going to watch it, this is one of those that if they put it back out on the big screen, or if it's out on the big screen in your town, I would recommend people go to see that. I would say, I know we were going to talk a little bit about snubs. I think that that in that category, Wendell and Wow, which received 24 nominations, including from the Critics' Choice Awards, African-American Film Critics Awards, and other national associations, was snubbed in that category. And I would have liked to have seen that particular film at least get a nomination.
Let's stay on the snub category, Reggie. What other movies or performances do you think should have shown up that did not?
Well, from an acting perspective, a lot of people think that Tom Cruise for Maverick was snubbed. I don't. I don't think he was snubbed. I think he did fine. I think it was an absolute solid movie and a good sequel for that franchise. But snubbed, no. But Adam Sandler for the movie Hustle, you will see a different Adam Sandler than the one that you probably, when you say his name, that comes into your head. So I think he was snubbed. Viola Davis for The Woman King, she was not nominated, and I believe she was snubbed. And then a lot of people haven't seen the film Till, which will be another movie that I would recommend people see. Danielle Detweiler played Mamie Till in a very, very powerful and breakthrough way. So those would be some from that perspective. Taylor Swift has been, people believe she was snubbed for her song for Where the Craw, I Know Where the Crawdads Sing. And then from a director perspective, which I have to mention, is that this year we went back to Only Men again. Only Men in the director category, and Spielberg now gets his 9th nomination for The Fableman. But you have Sarah Polley for Women Talking, you have Gina Prince of Blythewood for The Woman King, and you have Charlotte Wells for After Sun, and neither of them were nominated. So those will be some of the snubs that I would throw out there. There, movies, if you talk about movies, Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, you see the sequel Avatar get one, but not Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. And then Glass Onion, if you've heard about this film, they did a really good job. Some call it a sequel, but it's just a continuation of a different story, really. And Glass Onion is a Knives Out mystery. I think it got snubbed as well.
Talking to Reggie Ponder about the Oscar Awards coming up this Sunday. Still time for your nominations, your hope to wins at 800-642-1234. Or just a recommendation of a new movie from the last year, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Reggie, let's return to our tour of the Best Picture nominees. You just mentioned The Fablemans, Steven Spielberg. Some people said, you know, it's kind of one of those celebrations of movies. Other people said it's more than that. Where do you see it?
I think it's probably in the middle. I'll split the baby on that one. I know that's not a good metaphor, but anyway. But it is the kind of movie Hollywood likes. And so hence again, we have Spielberg getting another nomination, a 9th nomination. I think that's a record for directors, I think. But it is personal. It's a true story, and kudos to how they put it together. Michelle Williams was really good in this film as well. So I don't have any qualms with it. I just have more qualms probably with the snubs than the fact that he got another nomination.
Okay, now a friend of mine, I just talked to a friend of mine who's in Chicago actually, who had just seen this Triangle of Sadness, and I know nothing about it. And he liked it, but it's kind of weird. What's the deal with Triangle of Sadness?
Yeah, I think this is a sleeper film, actually, that if you look at a lot of the other awards, you don't hear a lot about this particular film. So I was actually, when we didn't talk about surprises, I was actually surprised that this particular film made it on the list. But I've heard a lot of buzz about it. I don't like, Robin, we've talked about this before, and I know I'm getting a little way away from the film, but I don't like this 10 film nomination thing. Every category has 5 nominations except the films. And I believe that they're doing that just from a money perspective, or just to make, or to quell some people's fears that they won't be recognized and those types of things. I just don't like it. But I do like it in the sense that some films like Triangles of Sadness get some shine that they shouldn't. But there's a film which is RRR, which I would have had on this list over Triangle of Sadness.
What's RRR?
It's so difficult for me to explain. It's about two men, Indian men who grew up in different environments, and they're trying to represent their culture, and they're doing it in two different ways. One infiltrates the British military, and then the other one is a rebel, and they end up having to fight each other. It's part musical, part action film. It's very, very good, and I would recommend that a lot of people see it. I didn't see it until the end, but that would be a recommendation.
And that's got a best song nomination that I've been reading some people, and I watched it. It's got a heck of a dance sequence attached to it. This is a top contender for best song anyway, if not for best picture.
That's right. So So that's what I would throw in there.
Okay, how about this Elvis movie? Baz Luhrmann, who's often kind of over the top, right, in the movies, which maybe is good for an Elvis movie. I don't know.
Yeah, for me, it wasn't good. I think that Austin Butler, again, deserves the nomination. There, before Priscilla passed away, she said that she felt that his performance was really true to her father. And so that's a, you know, that's a big thing. And I think that he did a great job in that regard. I think though, the telling the story from the producer perspective, which was a Tom Hanks character, it just didn't have that Elvis magic for me. So it was a bit over the top. I think it's consistent as you just said. And I don't think it has a chance of winning. I don't think he has a chance of winning. The front runners for best actor, I think, is Colin Farrell and Brendan Fraser. But a lot of people believe that Paul might be a front runner as well.
All right, Reg, you were just about out of time. Can you do a should win, will win for best picture as you see it?
Okay, so should win for best picture. Wow. Okay, real quick. I should win should be Everything Everywhere All at Once. That's what I voted for the Critics' Choice Awards, and I think will win. If it doesn't win, I will be flabbergasted and floored.
Reggie, we'll see what happens on Sunday, and thanks as always for joining us today.
My pleasure, Rob.
That's film critic Reggie Ponder. He appears weekly on Vocalo in Chicago, among other places. You can follow him on Twitter at Reggie the Real Critic. He was with us today to look back at the best movies of last year ahead of next Sunday's Academy Awards. Coming up after the news, we'll talk to a former state transportation secretary and a transportation policy expert about the idea of toll roads in Wisconsin and how they compare to other forms of funding for our key infrastructure in the state. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up, the Bucks may have seen their winning streak end at 16, but they're still the top team in the NBA's Eastern Conference. A Bucks beat reporter tells us why they're at the top of their game. Now, as the governor's office and legislative Republicans begin state budget negotiations, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss is again proposing a tolling system to help pay for Wisconsin roads and bridges. He has admitted the idea is unlikely to make into this biennial budget, but he told the Wisconsin Counties Association last week that he thinks the change should have been made years ago.
Imagine if in 2013, when we first started talking about tolling, if Wisconsin had already implemented it statewide. It would mean that our transportation system is fully funded, we have more money for local roads than we would today, and we would have a system that would actually work over the course of the next 100 years as we decide whether or not to transition away from gasoline-powered vehicles.
The debate over tolls in Wisconsin has now spanned decades, and state agencies have conducted multiple studies on transportation finance over that time. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the idea of having toll roads here in Wisconsin? What questions do you have about what it would take to make that happen, whether you like the idea or not? When it comes to paying for roads, what would you like to see change? Where should the money come from? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Mark Gottlieb was Secretary of Wisconsin's Department of Transportation from 2011 to 2017 under Governor Scott Walker. Before that, he was a state representative and mayor of Port Washington. Now he's the Associate Director of the UW-Milwaukee Institute for Physical Infrastructure and Transportation. Mark, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Before we dive into the toll roads themselves, I want to start with a bigger picture of transportation funding. There have been some big changes going back to the 90s in how we pay for the roads. That has made this such a lively issue. What are some of the biggest changes as you've seen it that make it tough to figure out?
Yeah, this has been an ongoing discussion for 15 years or more. I think it goes back to 2006 when the legislature repealed the indexing of the motor fuels tax And there were some studies done at that time to look at, well, how will we fund this in the future? And in fact, five studies that I'm aware of between 2006 and the current time. And, you know, what's made this more urgent today is as we see the nation clearly transitioning away from fossil fuels, more into alternatively fueled vehicles, we've had a system that's been for 100 years user funded primarily through motor fuel taxes. It's becoming clearer and clearer every day that that is probably not sustainable. So, you know, we're having a discussion about what is the next system of transportation finance? What does it look like?
Now, we heard Speaker Voss there again making the case for toll roads. He's been called for this for a while. I understand you're not on the same page. What concerns do you have about the idea of toll roads in Wisconsin?
Well, I don't know that it's a matter of saying I'm not on the same page. I think it's more a matter of, you know, let's make sure that we're looking at all the pros and cons. And again, how does this fit into a comprehensive picture of transportation finance? I think one thing to really remember here is that what's being talked about in Wisconsin is fairly unique. And that is we're talking about converting highways that started out as non-tolled facilities into tolled facilities. And, you know, most tolled roads that you drive on, you go to Illinois or Indiana Turnpike, Ohio Turnpike, those are highways that were built, designed, conceived, and built to be toll roads. And there's certain considerations that go into that in terms of how the accesses are positioned, and particularly, you know, how do I want to put this? Particularly looking at alternate routes. So when you design a toll road to be a toll road, typically you try to minimize the amount of diversion of traffic from that facility to other facilities that aren't tolled. That's how the toll road works. In Wisconsin, we've done completely the opposite over the years. We've tried to expand and improve our alternative routes. That's because we want to have, if there's an incident on the main road or there's construction on the main road, we want to have alternatives available to people to go a different way to get from A to B. So back in 2016, when I was secretary, we did have a very comprehensive study done of tolling by a major national consultant who does a lot of tolling work. And this was one of the things that they looked at is, if you convert, they looked at converting the entire interstate system in Wisconsin to a tolled system, and what would that look like? And I think two things to me stood out in that analysis. One is that because we do have a good alternative route system, you would get a significant amount of diversion. And this includes autos and heavy trucks. And the modeling that they did said if you converted the interstate system, you would have 16 to 36%, a range of 16 to 36% of the traffic that's currently on the interstate system would divert to local roads. And that's with a median level kind of toll level. If you have higher tolls, it's more. If you have lower tolls, it's less. But no, so you're looking at, say, you know, a sixth to a third of the traffic that's currently on the interstate system that's going to go off of it and go on to local roads. And a lot of that's going to be trucks. There are facilities that aren't as safe as the interstate system. So that's one of the things I think that's not really being looked at is this issue of diversion. Because as I say, we have a system that was built to accommodate people using multiple different routes to get from point A to point B. And if you have tolls, particularly truckers, are very price sensitive, and they will, some percentage of them will divert. And what does that impact have on safety? What's the impact of that on congestion in the local system and as trucks go through towns and things like that? The other point I think we need to talk about is if you make this conversion, again, the study estimated if you converted the whole toll interstate system, a capital cost of about $350 to $400 million just to you know, build out the gantries and the collection system, the infrastructure that you need to collect. And I think a lot of people think of open road tolling, you know, like they have in Illinois, as being, you know, the state of the art. And it is the state of the art of tolling, but it is not the state of the art of user fee based revenue collection. You know, a lot of people are talking about, are we ultimately going to move towards some system of vehicle miles traveled where we are actually tracking how many miles people drive on any part of the system, not just the interstates, local roads as well, tracking what they do and then charging them based on their mileage. A lot of people believe that that is the system that we're ultimately headed towards.
Talking to Mark Gottlieb, former secretary of Wisconsin's Department of Transportation, looking at how we pay for our roads. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss saying, let's have toll roads. Mark Gottlieb saying, well, there's pros, but there's cons we need to think about, looking at other options as well. You can join in with your thoughts or questions on the topic at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And Mark, you were just leading into what I wanted to ask. If not toll roads, what do you see as some of the best available options to have you, if we assuming we want users to pay for the roads?
Yeah, I think the first question is, do we want to continue to have a user fee funded system? I mean, that's a fundamental policy decision. We have had that for over 100 years. You know, maybe we don't want to have that in the future. Maybe we want to fund roads off of something other than a user fee basis. But assuming that we do want to continue to fund them on a user fee basis, I really think any of these alternatives, whether it's tolling, a vehicle mile travel system, anything like that, we should really be looking at four things and grading each of these ideas on four principles. And those are adequacy, sustainability, efficiency, and equity. Is the system that you're proposing, is it adequate? Does it raise enough money? Is it sustainable? In other words, it may work today. Will it still work in 15 years or 20 years? Is it efficient? How much money are you, for every dollar that you collect in gross revenue, how much of it's actually going to build or maintain your transportation system versus the overhead of, you know, running the fare collection system itself? And then finally, equity, which is, you know, geographical equity across the state. It's social equity between different social groups. I mean, so all these things, I think, does tolling fail on all those? No, not at all. But it doesn't get straight A's either. So I think as we go forward and we look at different alternatives, we have an opportunity here to totally rethink how we're financing our transportation system. Let's ground ourselves in those four concepts and judge each different alternative based on them.
And Mark, before I let you go, I mean, you mentioned there have been a bunch of studies along these lines over the years, and it feels to me anyway like we keep having roughly the same debate every 2 years in Wisconsin. How do we get from planning and theorizing into making significant changes?
Well, I think the reality of what's happening in the country today with the recent federal legislation that's really pushing the country in a direction of alternative fuel vehicles. I don't think, you know, it's a crisis. When you have a crisis, it forces you to act. I think the state's going to be in a position in the not too distant future where as the fleet of vehicles transitions to electric and other types of propulsion and fueling, there's just not going to be a choice because the fuel tax money is going to dry up and some other alternative is going to have to be come up with. And I hope that as the policymakers look at this, as you said, there have been a number of studies done. Some of them have been very detailed, very comprehensive. I just hope that they will look at those carefully and make a data-driven decision.
Mark, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
That's Mark Gottlieb, former secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Transportation during the Walker administration. He's currently associate director of the UW-Milwaukee Institute for Physical Infrastructure and Transportation. He's with us today looking at road funding and the idea of toll roads here in Wisconsin. We'll continue the conversation about toll roads. We'll get a national perspective. A transportation policy expert can shed some light also on how the system works for our neighbors to the south. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you think Wisconsin should pay to maintain its roads? Do you think toll roads should be at least on the table as part of that conversation? If not, what alternatives would you suggest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about toll roads as a transportation funding system after Assembly Speaker Robin Voss reproposed the idea for this year's state budget negotiations. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think it's time for tolls in Wisconsin? If not, what would you like to see done to help pay for road and highway maintenance in the state? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Joe Sweeterman joins us now, professor in the School of Public Service at DePaul University, also director of the Chaddock Institute for Metropolitan Development, president of the Chicago chapter of the Transportation Research Forum. His latest book is called Terminal Town, an illustrated guide to Chicago's airports, bus depots, train stations, and steamship landings, 1939 to present. Joe, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, Joe, as you were just hearing from our former Secretary of the Department of Transportation, Wisconsin relies pretty heavily on a gas tax to pay for our roads and highways. Is this normal? Are we an outlier? How do we compare to other states on that score?
No, it's a freight train heading for a wall, you might say here, because we've relied on this really since the early days, the post-World War II era in particular. And two things are happening. One is, you know, our highway system, much of it was built with 30 to 40, 50 year lives, those bridges, those embankments and things, pavement, and all that needs replaced. And states are not, able to come up with the funds to modernize our system. But on top of that, you know, people are buying electric cars, that's surging. And obviously you don't pay gas tax, motor fuel tax with that. Cars are getting more efficient to boot, you know, with hybrids and things. So the revenue situation has just gotten really tough, and Wisconsin's been sort of on the cutting edge looking at different ways to fund the system.
Okay, and so we might look south, and we see this Illinois toll system. Now, this used to be, I think, one of the most hated things for Wisconsinites who got stuck, including me driving to Michigan, say, on those tolls. I think people have warmed up to them now with the open road tolling. But are there things about Wisconsin that might not make that such an easy idea to steal?
Well, exactly right. And, you know, most of the interstates were built, you know, so-called free. You pay your fuel tax and vehicle registration fees and so forth. But in Illinois, you know, we sort of supplemented our interstate system with a tollway system. So if you've been on the Illinois Tollway or the Northwest Tollway, those were all designed to be toll roads from the start. And I'm sure a lot of Wisconsin folks have the I-Pass now, because you save lots of money if you have that. So we in Chicago are in a little bit better position, but in some ways we have fallen asleep at the switch too, or around the country, and we aren't seeing it so much right here in the Great Lakes, but governments are getting much more innovative, you know, with congestion pricing lanes, with variable fees during rush hour. And of course, a lot of discussion about roads just for trucks to get those off the system. So all this is coming together in the Midwest, and we just haven't done much in the last 20 years. So we're behind the eight ball.
Is there a state you'd point to, Joe, and say, yeah, they're on top of this declining gas tax revenue game. They're doing some good stuff that's going to help meet that gap.
Well, it's really kind of two things. One, we have seen in Oregon in particular, and some of the Western states, they started what you might say is a somewhat controversial practice of imposing fees for people buying electric cars that are pretty significant. And it puts you in a really tough spot, you know, because we're trying to promote electric use. We want to get rid of that carbon emissions from cars. You know, but the math of running our highway system just doesn't work unless we have revenue coming in. So states are enacting fees on electric cars. But Oregon also did a really cool experiment. You know, the technology, when we think of tolling, people always say, think of these old fashioned baskets you throw your 50 cents in and or even a transponder on your car. But, you know, in 10 or 15 years, we're probably going to have GPS that just knows where your car is. And you could get a bill in the mail saying you were on this road, which is a toll road. Your bill is $4.90 this month. You don't have to, have that transponder in your car. It could be built into the system of new cars and so forth. Now, that's kind of controversial.
Yeah.
People are really uneasy about the government knowing where you are at any given point. So there's ways around that by putting the GPS data in some sort of a nonprofit lockbox and that sort of thing. But that's the world we're heading to.
Let's bring on a caller now. Mike is with us in Green Bay. Mike, hello.
Hey, my concern is that the toll roads will disproportionately affect lower and middle income drivers, because they're often the ones who are forced to commute because they can't always afford to live in the cities that they work. Thank you.
Mike, thanks for the call. I heard similar concerns about things like congestion pricing, Joe, that it's in effect a regressive tax.
Well, I think a couple things. Yeah, there's certainly equity issues just ooze out of this this problem because, you know, car driving is not a luxury. It's a basic need for people. I think a couple things. One, the evidence has become pretty clear that with electric cars and with hybrids, it's mostly the affluent that are benefiting from paying less fuel tax now. So in a way, the system is becoming more regressive already. I think the data on congestion pricing, which, you know, is different than just toll roads, mm-hmm. but it seems to show that people don't use them a lot if, say, they're working people. But there are times when it just can be a lifesaver, you know, where instead of me taking an hour to get home because I'm stuck in traffic in Milwaukee or Chicago, I can get home in 20 minutes and it costs me $1.50 and my kid can be picked up from the daycare center or I can make that flight I need to make. So people make smarter decisions when they have choices. But the caller's exactly right. You may have to have some sort of a program for people where this broadsides them and suddenly they're forking out lots of money just to get to that essential service job.
Thanks for that call. Go next to Tim in Hollandale. Tim, hi.
Just had a comment. I think we should put one toll down at the Illinois-Wisconsin border. Charge $20. Cost me $20 to go to the airport back in Chicago. I think we can get our money back pretty quick.
Okay. Oh, so not just a one way for people coming north into Wisconsin. We're paying both ways, Tim?
I think if we could do it both ways, but I think just Illinois coming up here, we'd, you know, there's more than enough of them up here would make a bundle, I think.
Tim, thanks for the call. Joey, highly selective tolling strategy there.
It is a really interesting problem that speaker mentions. You think of Indiana where all that I-80 traffic goes through and the federal government is really being careful with interstate tolling for that reason, that a state could view it as a cash cow and say, oh, you want to come through our state? Guess what? It's going to cost you, as the speaker said, $20. And why there's prohibitions on tolling on interstates unless you meet all these criteria. And Wisconsin's been very, ahead of the curve, trying to, you know, find ways to toll that meet the criteria. For example, if you're adding lanes on a highway, that's fair use for the money. If you're, using congestion for congestion purposes and so forth. So there are federal prohibitions against that kind of money grab. And I think that's what people are fearful of. Once you start the tolls, City Hall can start saying, guess what? We have a budget deficit. We better boost the tolls. And it becomes, you know, like speeding cameras and red light cameras have a black eye because a lot of people see those as money grabs and not necessarily good policy.
Thanks for that call. Time for at least one more caller. Stella is with us in Sturgeon Bay. Stella, hi.
Hi. First off, I'm opposed to toll roads. And the only fair solution that my husband and I have been able to come up with is to have an annual charge based on weight of vehicle and miles driven that could be linked with the annual license renewal in order, and they just have to keep a record and report it. There's some way, I don't remember offhand right now, there's some way my husband said that it can be checked up on, that, you know, keep people honest about it.
Gotcha. Stella, thanks for the call. Joe, what do you think of the idea from Stella and her husband?
Well, Stella's onto something there that for heavy trucks, that's really the scene as the best practice. You know, heavier you are, if you're up at that max, which is 80,000 pounds, and you track the number of miles, and some states are doing that now, charging trucks, because, you know, a truck weighing 80,000 pounds may cause four times the damage of one at 50,000 because it just pounds the roads. But you could envision something like that. When you get a vehicle registration, it could say, you know, you're entitled to 20,000 miles a year. If you go more than that, you got to up your registration. But it would require to keep track of the miles. And I think GPS mm-hmm. is about the only way to do that, to have some sort of a remote system. And that's where you get into that civil liberties question of people knowing where you are. Yeah, but I'm confident we can overcome that, which we already do on certain things, like, say, cell phone data on where you are. It's mostly out of the public eye. But boy, there's vexing issues all around that.
Stella, thanks for the call. And Joe, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
Joseph Sweeterman is professor in the School of Public Service at DePaul University. He was with us today for a look at toll roads as a source of transportation funding and policy and alternatives. Earlier heard from Mark Gottlieb, former transportation secretary here in Wisconsin, on those issues. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, check out the latest efforts to make sure school meals are nutritious and healthful and the kids actually eat them. That's tomorrow morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. There's a cliche out there about people, mostly guys, I think, who keep random cords and wires and cables because you might need them someday. And I'm one of those people. I had multiple occasions in the house with various cables, bag here, crate there, stuff I hadn't used in years, but I kept them because you never know. A few years back when we did a cleanup, I did finally purge some of that stuff. Power cables from appliances we hadn't owned in years, coaxial cables that have no relevance to any piece of technology in our house. So I pared it down just a couple bags. Fast forward to this weekend, my wife asked if I could connect her mostly wireless printer directly to her computer. On closer investigation, the printer had kind of a weird USB connection, not one I see used very often. I didn't think we'd have that cable. But I dug into the bag of cords, and lo and behold, I had the right kind of cable. I'm not saying this justifies keeping lots of random clutter lying around. I'm not saying it doesn't justify it. One connection at a time, this is Central Time.